Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. I'm Paula. Crime breeds crime. While polygamy is illegal in the United States, the Mormon Church and others protect or ignore it, leaving at least 80,000 people living in polygamy in Utah alone. Our guest, Carolyn Jessup, says polygamy is spreading, leaving growing numbers of women, children, and men vulnerable to a fearsome array of other crimes. She was born into, then escaped, the radical polygamous cult, the FLDS, the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, an offshoot of the Mormon Church. It's the shadowy world she exposes in her memoir, Escape. While Ms. Jessup accomplished many firsts, including getting all of her children out with her and winning their custody, the tragedy and the crimes did not stop there. Why?
The mind control is a terrible thing to deal with and to break through. I was not able to accomplish that with my oldest daughter. We burned through 12 therapists and she eventually returned. However, there are basic facts where children have their rights being deprived that should be addressed. Education. Many of these boys coming out of this community are functionally illiterate. They cannot read, even some on a first grade level. That's it. That is a crime against a child. These are crimes that the state is aware of. They know what's going on, and nothing right now currently is being done to protect these children's rights. If we could start with even requiring the states to make these parents educate these children and give them the opportunity of an education, that's a start. But that's not the only thing that needs to be done. There are many things that need to be done. We need federal legislation. Whenever a state starts coming down on these groups and starts putting laws in place that apply to the human rights violations and the child abuses that they're committing, they pack up and move to another state that's unaware. We need federal legislation. If you're in this country, people have rights in this country. Children have rights in this country.
Carolyn Jessup was crucial to the arrest, conviction, and sentencing of FLDS leader Warren Jeffs. She is the sixth generation of polygamists and the first woman to be given full custody of her children in a contested suit involving the closed world of the FLDS. The story she tells in her book, Escape, mirrors that of countless others. Forced into an arranged marriage as a teenager, Ms. Jessup was the fourth wife of a 50-year-old man, one of the most powerful in the FLDS, who fathered her 8 children in 15 years. She now works with the state of Utah Attorney General on church abuses, actively campaigning in defense of those trapped in polygamy, and for nationwide enforcement of anti-polygamy laws. Bill Russell and I also oppose crimes, particularly those perpetrated behind the veil of religion. We welcomed this opportunity to learn from Ms. Jessup's courageous actions.
Carolyn Jessup, I came across a bumper sticker not long ago. Actually, while I was reading Escape, it said, "I think, therefore, I'm dangerous." And rather than Descartes' "I think, therefore, I am," I thought, you know, that's right. I think, therefore, I'm dangerous. Does that, for you, describe what it has taken to get from where you started to where we are and where we could go?
Oh, absolutely. That sums up my life in a very succinct way. That's when I did become dangerous to the FLDS, is when I started, when I broke through that mind control and started to think and started seeing through a lot of the crimes that were being committed against people.
Crimes. That's more than...
I would call them crimes, yes.
FLDS, let's first start with the translation. It's very important. Naming.
Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints. It's a group that broke away from the Mormon Church around 100 years ago. It's evolved into its own separate little isolated community religion. They do not convert. If you are not born into this community, this religious community, it's next impossible to become a member.
Well, how do they... I was just going to say, how do they propagate, but that is a little too good of a leading line.
Well, I'm a product of 6 generations of polygamy, 3 in the Mormon Church, and then the other 3 were involved in the fundamentalist movement that came out of the Mormon Church once they signed the manifesto. The manifesto is where the Mormon Church said, we are no longer living polygamy. That took place in the early, around the 1890s. In the early 1900s, they began to excommunicate members who continued the practice. And then later, around the 1920s and 30s, it became a lot more harsh. So the fundamentalist movement grew out of the Mormon Church by the time they started excommunicating members that refused to give up the practice of polygamy.
It's easy to say, oh, well, polygamy, that's just a big happy family, it's just another way of doing it. We should just, you know, everybody gets to have their own opinion. And this is way bigger than that, isn't it?
Well, it is a lot bigger than that. I mean, what it's actually evolved into is organized crime, family, an organized family that's involved in crime at many levels, from human rights violations to tax evasions to welfare fraud to laundering money to, I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
You're not speaking as an outsider in this.
I'm speaking as an insider. I was married to one of the most powerful men within the FLDS. I witnessed a lot. And I've taken a lot of this information to authorities. And when they've investigated, it's like every time they turn a rock over with crime, there's inroads to crime that goes everywhere. Utah's been investigating it now for 5 years. It's just a very difficult thing to prosecute because you cannot get witnesses. When people leave the group, they won't talk.
There's a reason for that, isn't there?
There's a huge reason. You're basically throwing your entire family under the bus if you go public with what's going on in this group. And that's a very difficult thing to do. My father had 3 wives and 36 children. A large percent of them were still in this group. For me to go public about what this group is doing is putting my family at risk. But at the same time, I believe they're at risk anyhow.
Mm.
And not speaking out is not the answer. One of the issues with polygamy is it's looked at as just an alternate lifestyle, another way to live. Big love is glamorized, the lifestyle. And perhaps in some settings, maybe it is just a big glamorous love affair with 3 women and everything's just wonderful. That's not what I experienced growing up in this lifestyle. What I experienced was something far different than that. And I believe personally that by driving the lifestyle into secrecy, it feeds the crime. Then there becomes a reason to hide everything behind closed doors. And once things are hidden, there's no lines that can't be crossed because nobody knows those lines are being crossed. So in many ways, the prosecuting of polygamy and coming down on polygamy, like some of that did take place in the early 1900s, it drove it underground. And it has made the problem a lot more complicated.
Well, polygamy is illegal, it's worth saying. Let's talk about the specifics of this when we come back in just a moment with Carolyn Jessup. Be with us. We are here. I, Paula Gordon, Bill Russell, Carolyn Jessup. We're talking about polygamy. We're talking about a time, a way. We're talking about many, 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 many elements that all come together in this oddly illegal and yet for some attractive lifestyle on many levels. Bill Russell?
It's sort of odd to me we're doing this on the day that Barack Obama is inaugurated as president. He comes out of an ethnic tradition that is that suffered under slavery for hundreds of years, and involuntary servitude and abuse even after the end of the institution. A lot of the things you talk about, it looks at the very least like involuntary servitude. But to juxtapose the wonderful event that is a black man becoming president of the United States.
A good man becoming president who is black.
Also that. In this immediate context, it seems to me that there's also a challenge because religion has been through the history of this country from day one, maybe day two. And various relatively extreme forms of religion have been a part of our historical experience, the American experience, and it seems to me that that this contraposition, this juxtaposition of finally the nation recognizing the humanity of non-whites.
Non-white men.
Non-whites. That we, perhaps there is some hope that we will begin to expand that understanding to women and to begin to examine some of the serious abuses that are done in the name of gods.
and children and the planet. These are opportunities.
Well, I say all that because it seems to me that the story you tell to me is just incredibly depressing. Because it happened to you, and it's happening to people. Continues to happen.
It's happening to thousands.
And it's happening right now.
And thousands of children. I mean, this is not a small, isolated group. The FLDS is one of the largest closed polygamous communities in the United States.
How many people
are many others.
How many people are we talking about in FTLS?
Around 10,000 in the FLDS, but there are around 80,000 polygamists in the state of Utah alone. And to get it polygamy and blanket it for prosecution is not going to happen. It's an impossible situation. So the authorities in Arizona and Utah, because it's so prominent there and into Idaho, it's just gone into a situation for the last 50 years of, okay, we'll just ignore it. And I'm here saying, no, you cannot ignore this, because there are people who are having their lives destroyed. There's the human element here. Many people who leave these communities, their life is a matter of human wreckage. There's not much left to salvage by the time they get out, and the extreme emotional, psychological, and physical damage that's been done to them. It's very hard to recover from. And when you bring up Obama, I mean, the day that he was elected, I never voted in my life. Because in this religion, it was a religious thing to vote, but you were always told who you had to vote for. And there was something inside of me that refused to go down that path. So I always found excuses to get out of voting. After I left, when Obama started running for president, is the first time I wanted to vote. And I voted, and he won. And it was huge for me, because Abraham Lincoln, one of the statements that he made is that there are two abominations in this country, slavery and polygamy. He dealt with slavery, and then he was assassinated. No one has dealt with polygamy. And it's time. It's time for it to be dealt with. This nation needs to get informed. They cannot continue to ignore what's occurring.
Well, and the rhetoric today, and a lot of it, and not just today, but throughout our history, American history, is about freedom. And mm-hmm. and these are violations. They're violations of basic human rights and the fundamental core notion that all Americans talk about, which is freedom.
And is there any freedom within the FDLS?
I never experienced freedom until I left the FLDS. So when I was on the run from the FLDS, it was the first time in my life I ever walked into a grocery store and realized that I could feed my children whatever I wanted for dinner, and there was nobody standing over me with a whip any longer.
You had eight children.
Eight children, and I had never been able to make choices for them. I had never tasted freedom till I left. And this is I was born in the freest country in the world, but yet in many cases I was a refugee in every sense of the word.
How so?
I didn't understand society. I didn't know how to fit in. I was running for my life when I first left. They were hunting me down.
And your children.
And my children.
And you got out with all eight.
I got out. I was the first woman ever to get all of her children out and get legal custody. Women do occasionally leave the FLDS, but they run and they hide. They rarely, if ever, get all of their children out with them. And then they're hunted down. When they're found, they run again. Because of my son's medical conditions, I knew when I left, running was not an option. I knew I would have to face them. So I did. When I walked into court, the judge got a look on her face like the circus had just walked into her courtroom, and she did not know how to deal with it. Here's a woman coming in. She's saying, I'm the fourth wife of a man who has seven wives. He's fathered 54 children. I have eight of them, and I want custody of my eight. So here, in many ways, we're both saying we've been breaking the law. Mm-hmm. We're both criminals. We openly acknowledge this. And I'm saying, I want children. I want custody. And he's saying, but I fathered these children, and I have the same emotions towards these children as any father, and I have rights.
Well, more than I have rights, there are many appalling lines in your book, Escape, that you render beautifully. Maybe the show stopped most when one of your children said, I think it was Betty, one of your children said, you have no right to us. We belong to Father. He owns us.
Children are property. In many ways, the very things that are going on within the FLDS, it is nothing more than legalized child abuse. And even when the authorities go in and they find the child abuse, it is so difficult to deal with the crime, because you can't get witnesses. You have everybody coming down on the state agencies that are trying to deal with the abuse and saying, oh, you're just persecuting them for their religion. People need to look past the religion. They need to look at facts. The state of Texas released a report saying that they found undisputed evidence that there was abuse and neglect in 91 families that they took out of that ranch. 91.
Out of how many?
Out of around 140.
And you're not talking about kids getting swatted. You're talking about broken bones.
We're talking about broken bones. We're talking about sexual abuse. We're talking about some fairly significant crimes. And yet these children have all been sent back and to the parents. And the parents, the only thing these mothers have really been required to do is take some parenting classes. You're talking about generational mind control. Parenting class does not fix generational mind control.
Well,
that's what's putting the kids at risk.
Serious risk, risk of death.
It's not only the children that are property. By your account, it appears that the women are property and are used essentially as currency.
That was my experience in the group. With arranged marriages, when somebody can assign you to a man and then a drop of a hat take you away from a man and reassign you to another man, you're nothing more than a commodity. And you very much are owned, and your children are owned. And you have no power over who you're going to be sleeping with from one night to the next.
You do have somebody at the end saying that she felt like she was a prostitute.
Yes, that before I left, there was a woman who had been taken away from about five husbands and reassigned. She had five children. Every one of them had different fathers. And she her statement about how she felt about her life was that it was filthy. She felt like she was a priesthood prostitute.
Priesthood?
Yes.
This notion of the priest head, the man of the family, the father as the priest head, the religious part even is pretty appalling, that women in particular and children, well, tell us about that, that the only way that you can get to anything like salvation or God or anything.
Well, it's not only is it polygamous, it is polytheistic, which I find bizarre.
Take it at your own. It's just the religion itself is pretty amazing to someone who's not, and you do characterize it as a cult, so I'm going to characterize it as a cult.
Well, yes, but if you actually look at the characteristics of the FLDS, it meets 10 out of 10. Of the characteristics for a dangerous and destructive cult. If a cult, many groups can be classified as a cult, but that doesn't make them dangerous and destructive.
Mm.
There's a list that you look at, and there's 10 elements on that list of control. If a group meets 8 out of 10, they are dangerous and destructive, and you need to be careful. The FLDS meet 10 out of 10.
Things
they have
like
everything on the list.
Things like?
Things like controlling you sexually, who you have sex with. Things like what you're allowed to be exposed to, so information control, geographical control, isolation. Those are just a few of the examples, but those are all elements to look at, and the FLDS use all those elements to control their members.
You quote the Attorney General of Utah as saying that he's got a big chunk of his state that is run essentially by, worse than what the Taliban does
mm-hmm.
in Afghanistan. This is America. This is 2008.
Nine, thank you.
He's not talking ancient history. He was talking within the last few years. For those of us who don't experience this on a regular basis, that it seems not only bizarre, it seems a screaming outrage.
Well, one of the issues with this condition is resources.
Hmm.
The resources to break it up, the resources to deal with the crime, and when you will not have victims talk. One of the methods that the Attorney General of the State of Utah has used, Mark Shurtleff, is to try to break into these polygamous societies and develop a rapport with the victims so that the victims will go to him for help, because it has to start somewhere. You can't prosecute crime when you have no evidence to prosecute it on and nobody will come forward. So those are some of the significant issues. But the Attorney General's Office in the State of Utah, they're looking at three approaches to the problem. One is to get services in place to help victims. There's minimal help there, but at least they've done something. When I came out, there was nothing. The other thing that they're looking at as prosecuting crime. Mark Shurtleff was very involved with putting Warren behind bars and going after other members of this group.
This would be Warren. Warren
Jeffs. So the case that put him behind bars was, Mark Shurtleff was behind that. Prosecuting the crime that you can get at. And then
those crimes were
an accomplice. He was an accomplice to the rape of a 14-year-old. And Mark Shurtleff has been very involved with passing legislation in the state of Utah against polygamous underage marriages because it's so prominent in these polygamous communities.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. There was a third.
The third issue is to break into these closed societies and break down the fear of the outside world. And he's done that through the Safety Net Committee meetings, and the Attorney General's office hosts those meetings every month. The AG's office in Arizona has participated and taken a similar approach. So it's not like nothing's been done. But the issue is there's so much to do. And then with Texas, what we had there with them taking the children, there were so many good people that did so much good. It's just, in a way, it's like, how could have it gone worse?
Mm.
Because of the issues that came out in that.
Let's go back to that point when we return in a moment. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, you, Carolyn Jessup, and we trust you'll be with us when we return. We are back with Carolyn Jessup, I, Paula Gordon, Bill Russell. You have that look.
The word power, I didn't do a word search, but power shows up in this, in your accounting over and over and over again. And without, I think, being in the middle of it, and you make it credible, just the psychological intimidation, but you talk about these people in the public sense, not just in the personal relationships and within the community. You talk about them as being extraordinarily powerful. And I'd help us understand that power at the state level, at the community level, in the family level.
Well, especially when you look at the pictures and the men look kind of wimpy. What
is this power?
Well, the FLDS, in truth, is not based, the religion is not based around polygamy as much as it is around power. If you really get to the core of this religion and how it works.
Polygamy is a tool.
Power and control, and polygamy is a tool to control people, so is arranged marriages.
How does that work?
It works in the social structure in the community. There's a very definite social structure in the community that controls everything. It controls everyday life, who you work for, the amount of money you earn, to your position and prestige within the community. That's from a community scale. And a lot of times where you end up in that would depend on who your parents are and where their power position was. So it's very much inherited. Now, in a family, like Merrill's family, there was a definite hierarchy among the women.
That would be the family of which you were a part.
That was the family I was a part of. He had a favorite wife, and everybody fell into a position somewhere below her. But she was the ultimate authority in that family. Merrill did what she wanted. She had a lot of power. And she was very, very manipulative, very controlling, and very cruel. And to some extent, it's like the more corrupt you are in the society, the more you rise to the top. It's just the nature of the system. And so in our personal family, the power structure had a huge impact. It had an impact on whether I could get shoes for my children, the jobs I did in the house, what my kids were allowed to do, if they were allowed privileges, if they were sent to bed without supper, or how badly they could be abused by another family member. Where you landed in that power structure was everything. One of the commodities that you could use to raise up in that structure is by reporting on other people. If one of the wives would report to Barbara, who was the favorite wife who controlled the family, if they could report other offenses that she could use to get this person in trouble with Merrill, then they could move up the status, the ladder, and essentially indirectly get protection from her. It's very difficult to explain, and it has many, many dynamics.
Well, you explain it wonderfully in Escape, and yet it's just hard to accept as to explain.
Part of this goes to the notion of God.
Yes.
And I think most of us, none of us, I knew nothing about this, what to me is just, I'm not sure I'd characterize it as theology. But you know, if you can, a short course on the underlying thinking, such as it is, that makes some of this possible.
Well, it gives them tax exemption as a religion.
Well, first of all, because it's characterized as a religion, it's left alone. The communities, the local communities around where we live did not really interfere with what we were doing. In the West, there is, to a large extent, live and let live, especially if it's religion, related to religion. You leave that alone. So that creates an enormous amount of protection for a lot of crime because it's done under the name of religion. And in many cases, it's essentially created a situation of legalized child abuse.
So what is the religion?
Slavery.
Tell me about the beliefs.
The religious beliefs is that the only way to God is if you are in obedience to, in perfect obedience to your priesthood head.
Which is?
For me, before I was married, that was my father. He was my priesthood head. He owned me. I was taught that I would never become of age at 18. I wasn't of age to make my own choices. I had the right to do what I was told, and that was a gift. Obedience is a gift. When I married Merrill, he was my priesthood head, and my only route to God was through him. For eternity. He owned me. He would decide in the next life whether I could be a member of his family or whether I had to go to hell, whether I was a wife or whether I would be a servant through all eternity. So if you displease your husband and he feels in himself enough grace in the next life, he may allow you to be a servant in his home through all eternity. But you would never become a goddess, you would never be able to have children, and you would never be on his right hand.
Goddess is not something you hear a lot about in American religions.
It's very much a part of the FLDS. It is believed that a man will be exalted to be a god, and those who are worthy will be exalted, and his wives will be exalted to be goddesses. And you will live through all eternity as a god and as goddesses.
This is the polytheistic part.
If you do not prove worthy, then you will be, for the rest of all eternity, a servant. If he does not want you in his family at all, then you basically would go into a lower dimension or hell. And he would leave you there until he chose to either allow you to come into his family as a servant, or he could allow you to go back and suffer the second death.
So we're not talking about the Old or New Testament here. We're not talking about any kind of a mainstream anything. This is kind of unto itself, isn't it?
Very much so.
Well, by your reporting, certainly by the time you left, they were into, you know, making ad hoc rules. I mean, it just, you know, make up a rule to suit whatever it is I want to do
today.
Tell
a story about red.
Yes, that was one of the areas where I became concerned before I left, is that there had been the old school thinking, and it had just carried on through most of my life. And every once in a while, you would see a tweak in the system. When Warren started taking power, when his father had a stroke, we saw a 180-degree turn in the system. And overnight, things that we had done our entire lives became taboo, like the color red. One day, we could never wear red again. Any red item or article in your home, you had to get rid of.
For why?
Because Warren explained it as that red was a color that was for Christ and Christ alone. And that it was mocking Christ to wear that color or to have that color in your home. So it is the Lord's color. But when he returns when he comes for the second time, he will come in a red robe. And that color is to be reserved for his second coming.
And what color was the car that Mr. Jeffs was arrested in?
Red.
So it was okay for him, but he could tell everybody else that they couldn't do it.
Yes, that was very common. But the thing that became very alarming to me was the day that he decided dogs would no longer be allowed among God's people. We had a child that was injured by a dog and did die from the injuries. Within a couple of days, Warren decided that we were not to have dogs in the community anymore. I think in reality it had nothing to do with the child's death. It was just that there had been the death, and it was a way for him to experiment socially with the community to just see how far he could go. Within one day, when he handed down that edict, every dog in that community was either dead or in the pound.
I want to go back to the hierarchy.
But the people themselves had done that.
They did not question. No, Warren sent men around to the homes. If you had a dog and you had not taken it, removed it from the community, to a pound in a local community, they took the dog. They took them and shot them. They killed them all. There were a few families in the community who were not FLDS. They did keep their dogs. The men didn't go to their homes because they couldn't legally take their dogs. But if you were FLDS, you could not put any Nobody put up any resistance, really.
Your husband is in absolute charge of the, he owns the family. But who is the male head responsible to?
Merrill was responsible to the prophet. Whoever is the prophet of God, that's who it feeds up to.
How do you get to be prophet?
It's ordained by God.
So, could I be prophet?
No, because you're a woman.
Right.
And you weren't born into the...
And you weren't born... You were not born
you
into
failed, the... You failed on all counts.
Whoa! Well, you talk about there being a barter system within the community. Do the men barter who gets to be prophet?
This is a core problem. Yeah. People that talk to God, and the rest of us can't hear them, it's an unstable system. It's an unreliable system, because I can claim to talk to God. You can claim to talk to God. Anybody can claim to talk to God. The question is, how do you enforce your conversations, your nominal conversations with God? And in this context, and in many contexts, it essentially appears to come down to brute force, either physical or psychological. Is that a fair...
That's very fair. Warren basically inherited the status of prophet. His father was the last remaining apostle, so theoretically, to be a prophet, you need to be ordained up an apostle and be the next in line for the position. And there's 12 apostles. After Leroy died, Leroy stopped appointing apostles. After he died, there was one apostle left. It was Roland. So based on the religious views of the community, Roland was the only man that could theoretically be the prophet. And he didn't. He stepped into that position. He never claimed to be. He never said he wasn't. There was not much communication there. He just took the position. Around the time that he started having strokes, Warren started using a lot of mind control in the community. He sent out his tapes, and he got a lot of power that way. He basically inherited the position from his father. Theoretically, based on the FLDS traditions and value system, he cannot be a prophet because he was never ordained an apostle.
So you not only have a corrupt and corrupting system, he's breaking the rules so he can enforce his own rules.
Yes.
Let's take this one step, if you will, higher. If he weren't such a terrible guy, would polygamy now be okay?
From my experience, no. But then I had a horrible experience with polygamy. I don't agree with polygamy. I think it's unnatural to every basic human emotion. My only conflict is I've seen the damage that's done by driving it into secrecy. I think that polygamy needs to stop being ignored, and the crimes that are being committed in the name of religion polygamy need to be addressed. I think the crimes are what need to be looked at.
Carolyn Jessup is with us and will be with us when we return in a moment when Bill Russell's will have a chance to...
I feel like that polygamy is a crime against a woman. But, you know, when an adult is consenting to that crime being committed against her, how do you protect her?
We'll find out when we return. Be with us. This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. Carolyn Jessup is leading us in thinking about a long-neglected, very important idea, which really has to do with misogyny, with the hatred of women. It isn't just polygamy. It is a universal look at what is the role of all people in a, I would say, civilized, but maybe that's not even right. Polygamy itself presents real dilemmas. And then when you add to that an abusive system, you're going to have crime. It's just sort of, it's almost inevitable, isn't it? Unless you have an outside force that says, you cannot do that. We don't allow that kind of abuse.
That's the issue right there. Without interference, the crime will never stop. It's not going to go away on its own. It hasn't for six generations.
Your own six generations.
Yeah, my children are the seven generations.
Well, this isn't one tiny little pocket in Utah, as you tell it, either.
No, this is spread throughout. The other element about polygamy is it's spreading throughout the Western United States. Women within the society are taught to have a lot of children. We were not allowed to use birth control. I had 8 children, and that was considered petering out and not doing what I should have done at 33. You know, I had 8 children. I should have had many more. Many women in this society have 16, and there were women in the community who had as many as 21. Warren teaches that a woman is a vessel to be used up in childbirth. So a woman's position, her value in this system is to have children and to have as many as she can.
You know, 5,000 years ago, when there were not very many people on the planet, you could sort of make the argument that you needed to have a lot of children.
Still hard on the women, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But 5,000 years ago is not now.
Well, for me, for example, when you speak of it being hard on women, any pregnancy after 4 is considered high risk. And for me, I started having high-risk pregnancies after 4. I was not physically able to have more than 4 safely. And so that's a very real reality. There is a physical element here that you can't ignore. But to the point of having a lot of children, that's why the problem's growing. It's why it's spreading. A mathematician ran the numbers at the rate of population within the society that I came from and said there will be 3 million people there in 70 years. This problem is not going away. It's getting bigger. Every generation is getting more severe. The crimes are getting worse because when you have perpetrators with unlimited power, the crimes can get significantly bad and they can go there quickly. That's what we have here. And without society stepping in and taking that power away and having some consequences, the crimes will continue to get worse. And the society is growing rapidly, and it's spreading all throughout the Western United States. One of the things that these polygamous communities are learning is they can take advantage of states quickly because they move in. The states do not understand what's moved in on them, and they take advantage of that.
Well, it is also important to say this isn't just one little cult. The Mormon Church itself has to be held responsible for some of the enormity of what this problem has grown to be. When you look at the attitudes that the Mormon Church has expressed in things like Proposition 8 in California, I had an aunt who came late to be a member of the Church of the Latter-day Saints, and she was one of the odd ducks in the family. But once she was converted, no reason need apply. And that might be true of any religion. It certainly was true of the Mormon Church itself, of which the FDLS is a prodigy, if
you
will.
I don't want to stop you.
Yeah?
That is not characteristic of religion. If you believe what James Carr is, we're going to have a brief discussion.
Thank you.
This.
You're exactly right.
This
you're
is
exactly
what he characterized.
Right. It's religion. An important.
James Carr wrote a book called The Religious Case Against Belief. And his argument is that these are not religions, that they are belief systems. That they are closed systems that do not permit for what he views as the utility, the benefit, the joy, the beauty of religions, which is the openness to a bigger world, a world that is growing, expanding,
a
developing,
sense of wonder.
Evolving, changing, and the wonder that is appropriate to that, that goes well beyond our modest rational faculties.
I am delighted to stand corrected. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Anyway, you were saying
the belief system that the Mormons created and have espoused, and again, you talk about growing. This is a belief system that has spread rapidly across the world, and for all that in the United States, they had to make a deal to be able to come into the Union. Polygamy still is conceptually, and the kind of we've been in the heart of the Mormon Church, and it's a very radically different worldview. Let me just stop at that. Don't we have to call a rose a rose here?
Well, yes, and that's one of the problems is that these polygamous communities have gotten really strong, deep roots. Right around, you know, right inside of a very strong Mormon community.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, it's their crazy relative. They're hiding in the attic. It's an embarrassment.
You mean the polygamists?
Right. The polygamists are an incredible embarrassment to the Mormon Church. Because it's like for me to come out and go public, well, I'm saying 3 of those generations were in the Mormon Church. And in many ways, they want to deny the fact that polygamy ever was a part of that religion. The other element is you have people who are staunch, strict members of the Mormon Church, and they have it in their heritage. Their great-grandfather had 4 wives. And so they feel a sense of obligation towards it. They feel a sense of reverence. They feel a sense of that once was our religion. One day we may live it again. So there's those elements there that prevents the Mormon Church from really wanting to take an active stand in this.
But they do want to tell me how to live.
That's true. They do want to regulate morality, especially in some areas. But when it comes to polygamy, they want to leave that alone and pretend that does not exist.
Well, in a sense, I mean, I'm listening to you, and I should probably ask this of somebody else, but since you're the best available, it seems that the Mormons seem to feel that they were coerced into getting rid of polygamy in order to become part of the United States, that it was a bargain they essentially made with the devil because the statehood was probably for economic reasons very important to them. But doing that under coercion, I think, leaves probably a lot of people, at least in the mythology and in the community that feeds on that mythology, feeling like that they were coerced and that it still violates their fundamental beliefs.
Well, their first three prophets, in fact, their first four, all were polygamous.
Right.
The first three lived at the fourth.
Aggressive.
Yeah. The fourth prophet actually had married women who had died, so he had one living wife. So he didn't actually live it, other than in name only.
You know, you think about the modern condition where you have people with serial monogamy who will be married three or four times, and we don't seem to object to that. What you're talking about is radically different from that.
Absolutely, because you have four, five, seven, 10 wives, and in the FLDS, we all lived in the same house. In Merrill's family, there were seven wives. He fathered 54 children. We had around 30 children living at home. And we lived in a 17,000 square foot house on top of each other. It was basically organized chaos.
Disorganized chaos.
Yeah,
I think organized might overstate.
Well, there was nobody in charge. I mean, this was
There was no adult supervision. There was some adult supervision, but we had the hierarchy among the wives, and we had everybody tattling on each other.
You know,
it was incredibly dysfunctional.
There are other societies that have harems, that have a number of wives, and that they probably have pecking orders as well. Are you making a sweeping statement that all polygamy is inherently bad?
From what I see, it's a crime against women. From my experience with polygamy, I am not in favor of it. It is unnatural to every basic human emotion.
Like what?
Love.
Love. Yeah, love is a big one. I was taught as a child that love was not necessary in a relationship. The relationship was for the purpose of producing children for God. It wasn't, and love was a Gentile thing.
That is anybody who is not FLDS?
Yeah, people who are not of God. So to be God-like, you did not need to have love in a relationship.
Yet that extended to your children as well in odd kinds of ways, didn't it?
Absolutely extends to the children, because the children are owned by the father. They're owned by the prophet. And if you love the prophet and you love God, you will surrender your will for a greater will, which is the will of God, meaning you would step back, knowingly allow your child to be abused, because it's the will of God. And if you love your child, it's in their best interest for God to have his will in their life. So those are the belief systems, and it's unnatural. The other element that I'd like to say here is I haven't really seen where polygamy is that great for men. I have not, in growing up in a community where that was just the standard normal way to live, I did not see a happy polygamous family. I did not see a situation where a man had a relationship with more than one woman at a time. I don't think it's possible. I think men are very human too. When they fall in love with a woman, that's who they want to be with, and she is their confidant, and they may be able to father children with more than one woman. But I've never seen a situation where a man loved more than one woman at a time.
Carolyn Jessup, we'll be right back. I'm Paula Gordon, Bill Russell. Carolyn Jessup has joined us. Dr. King used to say, until all of us are free, none of us are free. One of the things I found really moving in Escape, as you tell this incredible credible but incredible story, is you talk about boys being disposable in a polygamist setting.
They have to be. In a closed society where you're not converting, and 50% of the babies born are boys, 50% are girls, every time a man takes an additional wife, one, you have to get rid of the excess male population. It's the only way to perpetuate the lifestyle. So throughout the generations that I've been involved with this lifestyle, it's a very common thing for the boys to be sent away, excommunicated, sent out of the community.
What happens to them?
When I was growing up, they would leave around the age of 18 to 24, and they would go out, start a life, get a job, and just move away from the society. And sometimes they still had association with family members inside this society. But when Warren took over, and he went from more of polygamy to harems, literal harems, then the male population became a real problem. And he started having boys shipped out of the community at the ages of 16, and then it went to 14, and then down to 13 and 12. And he would just tell them, he would tell the father that the boy could no longer be in the community, and usually there was a crime that the child had committed, like watched a movie or done something. So he would tell the family to take them, and they would take them, put them on the street of a major city, tell them to never come home again. That they'd been turned over to the buffetings of Satan.
The what?
The buffetings of Satan, and that Satan would have his way with them through this life, and there was nothing good for them in this world, and as soon as they died, they'd be taken straight to the pits of hell, and to never, ever contact their family again. The boys were told, if you care about your mother, do not ever contact her. And do not contact your siblings, because if you do, you may cost them their salvation, and they may have to suffer as you're suffering.
It's also worth saying they also were uneducated. So they were essentially put out with no resources.
Absolutely none.
You're a teacher. How did...
many of these boys are functionally illiterate. Dan Fisher, who found me, I mean, helped me get on my feet and protected me, he made a quest to find these boys. There's an unofficial count of around 900 of them that are scattered. He found several of them and did what he could to help them. Many of them are so badly injured, it's been very difficult to help them get on their feet. And
Dan Fisher was also of FDLS, wasn't he?
Yes, he was an FLDS member. And he at one time had three wives, but he had a very difficult time living polygamy. And he had a very difficult time with the abuses towards women and children. He has such a kind heart, he couldn't cope with it.
There is a phenomenal lack of compassion, a lack of love, a lack of... There doesn't seem to be any beauty in this life.
I didn't experience any, but... when you require people to live an unnatural way and they do unnatural things, and when you have to get up every day and do things that are unnatural to every basic human emotion, you lose touch with reality, you lose touch with who you really are, you lose touch with the beauties in life, and life just becomes very ugly.
We don't, I think, appreciate how dramatic effective brainwashing is. Mm-hmm. And by brainwashing, we're talking about creating an alternate reality that dominates and controls everything. You make it clear that is a powerful source. How did you manage to escape it? How did you break out of that universe that had been created for you and that you were in the midst of?
I broke out of it one step at a time, one day at a time. It wasn't easy. When you are born into a cult or indoctrinated into one and you become a victim of mind control, you live your life with two identities every day. Your cult identity, how you're supposed to think, how you're supposed to act. Keep sweet no matter what.
Keep sweet.
Sweet no matter what. If somebody's injuring your child, you do not interfere. You keep sweet no matter what. Every moment of your life is controlled with the do's and don'ts of the cult identity. And it's very dangerous to step out of that identity when you are living within a cult, because all the
totally,
other members...
This is totally passive.
That's one element, one part of it. However, when you are put in a situation of survival, the other identity, which is your authentic self, it's who you really are, no matter how intense the mind control, you never erase, you never destroy the authentic self. And it's in cases of survival that the authentic self breaks through the cult identity and will take over. And that happened for me.
But it doesn't, does everybody have this, that they just have a lesser authenticity?
Not necessarily. I was put in more extreme circumstances and my authentic self broke through multiple times. It started when I was managing a motel for my husband. And that's a long story.
Yeah. It's in the book. And you tell it well in its
good. And then where I believe I had the most significant breakthroughs was with my son's cancer. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that a life-threatening condition like that in many ways saved the life of a family. It saved all of our lives. I don't know that I would have broke through that mind control if I would not have gone through that experience. It was horrific. It was traumatic. I wouldn't wish it on the devil himself. But it saved my life. And it saved the lives of my children. And in many cases, Harrison saved himself by going through that. Even now, with all of the conditions that he deals with on a daily basis, his life is so much better than it would have been if he would have been a normal kid growing up in that society.
Just saying a great deal. We'll be back in a moment with more from Carolyn Jessup. Be with us. I'm Paula Gordon. We are with Carolyn Jessup. Bill Russell.
There's this notion of magical thinking, believing the world is as you want it to be rather than as it actually is. But I want to engage in a little magical thinking. given your magic wand, what can we do? What can we as a culture, what can we legally, what can states, what can communities, what can the federal government, how do we stop this outrage, this abuse, this violation of basic freedoms? What do we individually and collectively need to do?
I think it starts with getting informed, becoming aware of what's occurring in these closed communities and starting to petition Congress to make some changes. This is too big of a problem for individual states. It needs to go federal. There are so many federal crimes being committed in these societies, and people need to start writing their congressmen or emailing them, making phone calls. Why is this being allowed? But first of all, they need to get informed. They need to be aware of facts.
How do they get those? Where do you get facts? Other than reading your book?
Start by reading Escape.
Escape has a lot. Escape is the human wreckage of this lifestyle. The damage.
But this isn't a data. This is not the database.
This is not the database. And where I'm hoping, and I'm working with some attorneys right now to get some information on the internet that is facts. The Southern Poverty Law Center, they have classified this community, this religion, as a hate group. They have data. They have the information as to why they made that classification.
Well, and it's important to say that Morris Dees, who founded the Southern Poverty Law Center, this is the group that outed the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, not only outed them, put them out of business, yeah. Effectively.
The other element with the Southern Poverty Law, I mean, if people can contact them and make requests not only for information, but that they start looking at the hate crimes this community is committing against non-FLDS members.
Like what?
I'm on the advisory board for the UEP Trust. It's the United Effort Plan Trust. It owns property valued around $110 million. It's over 800 homes, and it's almost everyone who are members of the FLDS live on this property. Around 30% of the population are non-FLDS. And as after the kids went back in Texas, we had an outrageous amount of hate crimes being committed against non-FLDS members on this trust. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of stories. There's a lot of crime that's occurring. And I think that most of all, it's getting informed, get the information you can, find out what's going on, and then in an educated way, go to people who can make a difference and start demanding that something's done to clean this problem up.
It's not going to be easy. One of your daughters went back when she could have done otherwise. So this is not, oh, well, that's no big deal.
That's true. The mind control is a terrible thing to deal with and to break through. I was not able to accomplish that with my oldest daughter. We burned through 12 therapists, and she eventually returned. However, there are basic facts where children have their rights being deprived that should be addressed. Education. Many of these boys coming out of this community are functionally illiterate. They cannot read, even some on a first grade level. That's it. That is a crime against a child. These are crimes that the state is aware of, they know what's going on, and nothing right now currently is being done to protect these children's rights. If we could start with even requiring the states to make these parents educate these children and give them the opportunity of an education, that's a start. But that's not the only thing that needs to be done. There are many things that need to be done. We need federal legislation. Whenever a state starts coming down on these groups and starts putting laws in place that go that apply to the human rights violations and the child abuses that they're committing, they pack up, move to another state that's unaware. We need federal legislation. If you're in this country, people have rights in this country. Children have rights in this country.
This is interstate commerce. This comes under the Commerce Clause. This is addressable by the federal government.
This needs to be addressed by the federal government. The federal government is big enough. They have enough resources to deal with the problem. The states do not. One of the problems that the state had in Texas with these children was resources. It spiraled into a situation that was desperate quickly. I think they went in, they're planning on taking maybe 70 children, 30 children out of that ranch. They came out with 450. They didn't have adequate resources to provide services to children that were injured that badly. It spiraled into a bad situation quickly.
I want to say, I'm going to go back to John Dean and talking about the current Supreme Court and talking about the fundamentalist on the Supreme Court. That it, you know, one more what he characterizes as a fundamentalist on the court, and you can kiss the federal legislation notion. Kiss it goodbye because these people believe that the states can do pretty much, that the Bill of Rights does not apply to the states. So it is important who is on the Supreme Court. It is important who is president and appointing people to the Supreme Court. But we're in this is a very dangerous thing. We can't assume, we haven't reached the point, you haven't reached the point of living happily ever after.
No.
However,
I don't think that's the possibility when I know that people I love and care about are being hurt.
We do, however, live during a moment on this very day when hope has returned to America. And we thank you for being ready to do the hard work to put that hope to work. And we will certainly be there with you as you free yourself and those children. What a wonderful way to have escaped.
Thank you.
Carolyn Jessup's book, Escape, is riveting. Her remarkable courage is equaled by her modesty and her commitment to saving others from the ravages that she endured. Now it's time for the rest of us to do our part. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you health.